All right. Well, it gives me great pleasure to introduce my sponsor, Mr. Big Lou from Orchid.
Hey, everybody. Listen, I'm an alcoholic.
And that's for sure.
Welcome new guys, you know, if you're relatively new or new, and welcome, happy birthday to the birthday people, and Glenn, thanks for asking me to share tonight, Ken, thanks for being here, and all the guys from Thursday night, people that I know, and, you know, it's kind of like, I know almost everybody in this room, and, you know, just a few people I don't, maybe two or three. And it's because I stayed here, right? And I didn't get here with a success story, right? You know, I got my experience, my strength, my hope, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And that's what I got. What it was like was, I grew up, I'm an immigrant to this country. When I was 3 years old, my family immigrated from Holland. And, you know, we came over here, my parents, we couldn't speak the language, the whole thing, $100 in their pocket, 3 kids. And, you know, so, you know, I had very driven parents, or driven father anyway, driven dad. And, you know, they wanted a new life for themselves here in America. And so they came, and, you know, it was the greatest thing they had ever done. You know, my dad was always so proud of that. We got here in 62, and they became citizens in 68. And, you know, it was, that's a wonderful thing to look back and say, you know, where my lineage and where I came from, and, you know, that my experience may not be exactly like everybody else's, you know. And I do remember, you know, my parents, they couldn't speak the language, they, you know, I remember the people making fun of us, and, you know, my dad would stand us, you know, when we got old enough, he bought these clippers, you know, because we had no money, and he'd just stand us on the toilet, and he'd just hold the clipper, and he'd say, okay, turn around, and then we'd run outside, and that was our haircut. You know, so we got laughed at a lot, and I don't know what that has to do with anything, other than, you know, I was really young, and, you know, maybe felt a little different. You know, didn't quite fit into the normal realm of being an American citizen. And life went on, you know, started to do good, and, you know, going to school, normal stuff, you know, all the way through, you know, 7th, 8th grade, you know. And we moved when I was in 5th grade from Santa Maria out to Orchid, and that was a major turning point in my life. And I had a whole host of friends, a whole group of friends, and I left them all. And Orchid at that point, you know, 50 years ago, was really small. There wasn't anybody. I mean, the end of town was JCPenney. That was the end of town. And you know, I remember being on the playground at Migration School. That was an elementary school back then. I remember I was out there playing, and, you know, everybody after school went home, and I was out there, and, you know, and I was the only kid on the playground. And because when we lived downtown, we grew up right by Fessler Street, and there was all the athletes and all the kids, and we play every day after school at Tesla. No matter what season it was, no matter what sport it was, that's what we did. And so we were I was out there, and there was nothing happening, and there was nothing going on. I remember I had a basketball, and I was shooting baskets, and I come back, and I was walking on the playground, and I sat on top of the ball, and the teacher came over to me, you know, and said, you know, and I was, you know, in distress, you know. I in fifth grade, right? She just said, ask God to come into your heart, you know. And that was kind of like the first thing I'd ever been aware of, God or anything like that. Never gave it much thought, but I never forgot it, right? So, because it's really weird how God works in our lives. You know, when we inventory it, we can see different things. And so anyway, it was rough. That was kind of a rough period in my life. Probably changed the direction of my life to some degree, you know. And then 7th, 8th grade, you know, played basketball, played sports, did all that stuff. Went through high school, played sports, you know, was popular, was a decent athlete, you know, 4-year letterman in high school, varsity letterman in high school, so that was strange. And when I turned 18, a little in my senior year, this is, you know, my first drink really was when I was 14 years old. And me and my friend, we just mixed up a whole bunch of different boozes, and we got really, really drunk and really, really sick, and I decided. We had one of our other friends who already had a car, who was 16, came picked us up, and they dropped me off at some girl's house that I didn't even know, you know, that type of thing. But my parents, I got home that day, and my parents never said anything. They never said anything. And I had to reek, you know. I had to reek like alcohol. Never thought anything of it until after I told her this last time. So anyway, here I am, you know, and this is 14, I drink, you know, 16, started smoking a little dope, you know, come 18, turned 18, middle of my senior year, I started just smoking weed every day before I was going to school, before class, assemblies, prep. Whatever, you know, I was gone. And it was that quick for me because drinking on the weekends and partying and doing every outside issues and substances that you could possibly do back in the 70s, I was doing them. And so I kind of had that downhill slide, you know, and I was still trying to maintain, I was still trying to go to school, so I got through school. You know, my senior year, I graduated, and I could go play basketball at Hancock, so I played basketball at Hancock 1 year. And I was kind of like the team dealer, and, you know, I was kind of the guy that the coach walked in when we were at the Modesto tournament, and it was beers and bag of weed sitting on the counter, and he just closed the door and walked off. You know, because I was with one of the other players that was one of the star players, and, you know, so I mean, it was a downhill slide, you know, and I couldn't go to practice without getting loaded. I couldn't do anything. I just was self-sabotaging my life since the time I was 15, 16 years old, really, since I first picked up. You know, didn't really realize what I was doing. Didn't understand it. I had no tools. You know, I kind of grew up in fear, you know. It was like whatever my dad told me to do or told my brothers to do, it was you jump, you jump. Yes, there's no arguing, there's no really backtalk, there's nothing. It was one way or the highway, it was Jasper's way. And he was a good man, you know, he was a good man. And I'm grateful to have been raised by him today, see? Because he taught me so much more than I could have ever imagined having learned, you know, thinking, because my thinking was 180 out, right? But I never had the ability to communicate with anybody, you know? You didn't really talk about what was going on. You just kind of did the next given thing, right? So anyway. So anyway, I'm playing ball at Hancock. I get hurt, and I get done playing basketball. You know, I was done. I got hurt over the knee, and then And I just kind of faded out the second semester after that. It was like, you know, I don't really want to be in school. It's getting in the way of my partying. And, you know, I thought I had better ways of doing things. You know, I mean, I'm 17 years old, a senior in high school, 17, 18 years in high school. And I'm driving down to Santa Barbara, and we're bringing back pounds of weed and keys and the hash and, you know, all that stuff back in the 70s. Never once gave a thought about what it would do to me, for sure, because it's all about me. But I never considered what it might do to my parents, you know, or anybody else in my life, you know. It was just the natural thing to do. And, you know, so here I am, you know, and I don't know what to do. So I get out of school and I work odd jobs for a little while and, you know, I'm drinking, partying, doing the whole thing. I work Columbia Records, Piper Aircraft. These were all companies that were here back in the day. And didn't really see myself going too far or doing anything, you know. Like, I didn't see myself getting ahead. And both of my brothers had gone to Cal Poly and graduated Poly, so here I was, alcoholic dopamine, right? Just didn't fit in, felt like he didn't fit in, and definitely wasn't going to be able to go to school, you know, because I kind of kicked that to the curb. You know, and so I asked my parents, my dad had a business, and so I asked my dad if I could come work for him. And so I worked for my dad for 2.5 years, and then I asked him if I could go to school to learn the trade that I was learning from him. So I went to school down in Orange County for 2 years. And then I went to dental tech school to learn the theory behind some of the practical stuff that I was already learning. And that was a killer time, dude. Early 80s, living in Huntington Beach, Newport Beach. I mean, you know, and here I am, 21, 22 years old, got shit going on, thinking I'm just it, you know. And my best buddy was a quarterback at Evergetti with me. He ended up moving back down to Huntington Beach, and we lived together. And him and I lived together for about 6 years. And, you know, it was on, dude. I mean, it was on. And, you know, I stayed down there and got out of school and then came back and went to work for my parents. And that worked out for a little while, but, you know, I couldn't do it. I mean, I had a girlfriend who we were living together. When I got out of school, I came back to town. We ran in a house that my dad had, and that didn't work out because of my drinking and using, straight up. And so I was going to work. I was drinking all the time. I was just going and getting hammered every night, right? Didn't want to feel feelings. Didn't want to deal with reality. Just wanted to check out, you know. And I moved back down to Huntington Beach, and they came and moved back in together. And I was down there for another 5 years, 4 or 5 years, and, you know, it was middle 80s. So, I mean, if any of you guys went through the 80s and you knew what was going on, I was there doing all that stuff. I mean, this is my wife and my wife's daughter, my stepdaughter, Maggie. Anyway, I thought it embarrassing. I haven't got to that part of the story yet. So, you know, I went back down there and had a good time. And then I was down there 4 or 5 years and came back to San Marino. My oldest brother was working for BASF, which is a chemical company, and he was in sales. He didn't like it, so he talked to my dad. He went through that same program after having his BS degree in chemistry and all that stuff. So anyway, make a long story short, he came back into the business, and then we kind of were taking it over. Well, you know, when you're living the life that I'm living, you know, we just don't put it down. You know, I didn't know how to put it down. At this point, I'm, you know, 25, 6 years old. And, you know, so I would continue doing the same thing. You know, I was, you know, had an ego this big, had some money in my pocket for the first time, with maybe some real money for me, anyway, for the first time. You know, and I was living like I spent it all. I spent every kind of shit, yeah. Because that's what I wanted to do, you know. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to do all that stuff. And that was a big lie, you know. It was a big lie. Anyway, in 1986, I went to my first rehab. I walked into work on a Tuesday after being gone. Went out Thursday night, didn't get back to work till Tuesday, right? Walking to work on Tuesday and say, you know, I think I got a serious cocaine problem. I went out to rehab that day for cocaine in March of 86. And I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous back then. And I stayed sober for a year and 4 months and like 2 weeks. You know, and then I picked up again. You know, I was living with this nurse that was in the program, or in the hospital. She was a nurse at the hospital. I hooked up with her. We ended up living in Shell Beach. You know. And eventually I got a serious but discontented, and you know, my best thinking said that I could drink again. I just got a problem with cocaine. I drank again. And so then I went up to the liquor store, got three beers, drank three beers, and I'm fine. So there I am, managing all my drinking. Right? We have a party at that place, up there in Shell Beach. And a couple of my friends are down, gone down from mine, and stuff like that. And they went downstairs and had a few lines for different people, and then, you know, you walk down, well, I remember there was two lines left, and I just snorted them both. You know, I wasn't waiting for anybody else. First time I saw it, I just went right after it. Nothing had changed. And I took off, and that was the beginning of a 7.5 year run. You know, I could not get sober. I could not get clean. No way. You know, I bopped in and out, bopped in and out. I'd get maybe 2 weeks. And then I just didn't care. I didn't want to be here anymore. You know what I mean? I did not want to be here. It had taken full grip of me and the disease. And it worked. You know, hadn't really worked any steps. I did the 1-2-3 shuffle the first, you know, through that rehab and getting out and staying sober that 14 months. I did the 1-2-3 shuffle. Never completed the steps. Complete the steps, please. This last time I got here, it was a 7.5 year run, and this was not the bottom of it. So I worked for my family for 5 years. You know, four years. They kicked me out. They asked me to leave. They kicked me out. I was president of the company at that point. They kicked me out. And it's still, you know, I learned to forgive, but it's still difficult. I've been through so many different things, you know. Five years, and it was right before Christmas, and then that's when I think the first Iraq War broke out. And so I laid on my couch for like the first 3 months, didn't do anything. I pulled the home equity loan, credit off my house that I had. And I lived like my lifestyle didn't change. I was going to the lake. I was going boat racing. I was going to Jocko's. I was going to all the things. And just, you know, and things were starting to run in. I finally decided, okay, about a year, I decided, okay, it's about time now. And then I started looking for a job. Found a job out of Santa Rosa. And that's just north of the Golden Gate, right by now. And so anyway, I went up there and I did okay for about a year, but I was using and I was drinking. But either I was using or I was drinking. Right? And then I switched from drinking and using cocaine to methamphetamine. And meth took me now. And I just stopped going to work one day. You know, I just stopped going to work. And then I ended up having to sell the house that I had bought and with my parents' help. They loaned me some money because I was doing okay. I was doing good up there. They loaned me some money. You know, and I ended up buying and selling that place within a year. And I snorted it up now. And I snorted two houses and a business and a family. You don't realize it. You don't realize what you're doing until it's too late, you know. And when you're in it, you don't care. I didn't care. After I got kicked out of the business, I felt excommunicated from my family, like I was no longer loved. I was not part of the family. I didn't feel like that. And today I understand why. You know, why they did what they did. You know, they just couldn't see me killing myself anymore. And so up there, you know, I just stopped going to work one day. And then, you know, sold the house. You know, and I think I had like $5,000 left, and then it was like, okay, got an apartment to rent, you know, and a place to live for a little while. The $40,000 truck was gone, the $8,000 Blazer was gone now, I just had $1,000 El Camino. So, you know, financially bankrupt, emotionally bankrupt, spiritually bankrupt, just bankrupt in every area of my life. Not even understanding what's going on. So, I was so filled with resentment at my family that I was unemployable for like 2.5 years. Totally unemployable. Homeless for 2 years. And lived my life. You know, lived that life. And, you know, I hadn't been home, and like I said, I hadn't been back here in San Ray in a couple of two and a half, 3 years. I hadn't been home for Thanksgiving, Christmas, nothing. And I remember I called my parents and I asked if I could borrow some money, and, you know, and they said, we'll send you some money if you promise to come home. And so, my brother Jasper was there. And he said, Dad, you need to send me some money. So they sent me some money. They wired me some money. And the first thing I did was go out and buy a ball. What do we do? And that's what we do. Packed up my car, you know, El Camino, and waited till the last minute. And I had gas and just enough money for gas. Anyway, I got home. Car was empty, my oil light was on, and I pulled into my parents' driveway. It was a gunshot. One more time, God was doing for me, but I couldn't do it for myself. It took me 15 hours to get home from Santa Rosa to Santa Maria. I drive, I pull over, I crash it, you know, me and my dog, you know. And then, you know, it was Thanksgiving. You know, my sobriety date's 11/27 of 94, so I got 26 years, okay? So, I was sober when I got home, but you couldn't call it sober. You can call it detoxing, probably. And I probably stayed sober for a couple, 3 days while I was around the house, maybe had beer or something like that, no drugs. Had some, you know, cocktails, whatever. And then my dad said, just chill and hang out. You know, just chill and hang out, you know. So I said, okay, I've got to wash the cars, do little things, you know. And I haven't worked 2.5 years. I don't know what to do anymore. You know, I'm spying. And So anyway, Thursday, Thanksgiving, Saturday, my dad says, you better go, you can't be there anymore. Okay. Well, get in hell from here, come on, slice another $60. You know, my girlfriend at the time, he come down to our hotel room, it was the old Motel 6 on Main Street, drove one. And it was the Econo Lodge or whatever, you know, back then. And put me in the sweeper session, she came down and, you know, had like a six-pack beer, you know, like a gram of cocaine. I don't even like cocaine anymore, you know, like, well, that is nothing. I was 5 o'clock in the morning and, you know, here you are, you're still up, right? I mean, here you are, I walk out onto the railing outside and I think to myself, God, are you still in this town? And I thought, I was so pissed off. I couldn't get high. There was no more money. There was nothing to do. My girlfriend said, you want to go back to Santa Rosa? I said, I got no job, got no money. I said, can't go. Right? Can't go. So I stayed here. I went and sat on Ray J's porch for the night. We had Thunders and Sobriety. And he died sober. And he put me up and I slept on his floor for the first three months. First 3 months. And that when he said to me, he said, look, you need to do this. These are the foundations of my recovery. One, you can't get loaded. Two, you got to go to meetings. And three, you got to get a job. What? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you got to be kidding. This is way too much to ask one person. You know who I am. Right? And so anyway, and that was the start of my recovery. I started coming here at 1600 Club. I started coming to, you know, all meetings around. And, you know, I was going to a lot of, at the time, NA. And I was one of those people who came in through the side door because I thought I just had pretty much just a drug problem. Right? So you guys have heard my story. I've been listening to it now. I realize that I am an alcoholic. And I came in through the side door, and I came in through the side door from the Products Anonymous. And I realized today that I've got much more now with alcohol than I do with drugs. No doubt. If I didn't order it again, it would probably be because I take a drink first. You know, not because of the dope, not because of any of that stuff. You know, I conceded in my innermost self that, you know, I am an alcoholic. You know, the DUIs, the peeing out of pants, the winding up naked in the middle of the, you know, hallway, crawling to the bathroom, you know, wondering what's going on, you know, the DUI, it's, that stuff gets glossed over by the other issues that I have, right, the drugs and stuff. You think, oh, that ain't that bad. You know, I know a whole bunch of people got DUIs. Well, I don't know if you like me, but, you know, I hang out with people like me. You know, now I hang out with AA people because I'm an alcoholic and I'm sober, right? See? I've learned that you got to become disciplined about your recovery and that you need to be consistent and that it takes time, you know, and perseverance to not get loaded. It does, man. This ain't easy. I was the guy that would walk around the block screaming, yelling, F this, F that, F this, F that. And then I'd say the Serenity Prayer. I'd say the Lord's Prayer. I'd go back to work. And break out the back door where I was working. And be back, you know, screaming, yelling, F this, F that, every half hour. I remember I went to work and, you know, boss said, we got to talk tomorrow, you know, we got to talk. And so I go in and say, yeah, what do you want? Well, what's up? You know, it's like nothing, you know, I'm here, right? So anyway, and he says, man, you can't act like that anymore. You can't act like that anymore. People are scared of you. You're wondering if you're going to, you know, take somebody out. They don't know. These guys are thinking about how they're going to take you down. You know, this is the first time somebody called me on my stuff in a long time. Long time. You know? I mean, I don't even tell you half the stuff, right? But it made me become accountable for my actions, for my behavior, you know? I remember I had 3 days. That's huge time for a guy like me. 3 days is an eternity to be clean and sober. You know, and I got 30 days, I got 60 days. And I start breaking insane stuff. You know? And I was so sketchy for the first year. You know? I don't know, other than I met this woman, her name is Pam. And Pam and I got together. She had 20 years of sobriety and I had 3-4 months. Everybody was betting an eye against us. Everybody said, stay away from him. But she loved me. She loved me unconditionally. And God put her in my life at that moment. And we were together and got married in this program, and we were together for 13 years. And she passed. She passed when I had 12 years of sobriety. My world came apart, you know? My world came apart. And, you know, people in Alcoholics Anonymous surrounded me in my house. My wife was home on hospice. You know, and my house was there. There was people from Alcoholics Anonymous in my house 24 hours a day. Billy remembers he was there. And, you know, he'd come by and bring stuff. And it was the most beautiful thing. It was an honor, you know, to be there for my wife. But it was such a beautiful thing in hindsight to see what a wonderful love and fellowship this is and how people actually are real. Man, these are real people here. You know, they'll save your life. You guys have saved my life. I'd like to say thank you to all of you already for that. You know, whether you're new or you've been here a long time, you guys are 12-stepping me just as much as I'm 12-stepping you. You know. So anyway, you know, I got to stay here this time, you know, because of the things that you guys have showed me. I trusted what you guys had told me and the suggestions and the steps and the working with others and, you know, doing the program. Being part of rather than being apart from. Not trying to, I no longer feel different. I no longer feel like the kid that can't speak the language. I no longer feel like the little boy on the playground. I no longer feel like, you know, I miscommunicated. I've got unconditional love here. I've got, you know, an undying friendship with people, man, that you just can't find anywhere. Now, this is the best family, tribe, whatever you want to call it, you'll ever find. You know, my friends here, they don't judge me. You know? And that was really messed up. That's all right. You know what I'm saying? Like, how can you think like that? I get it. You know what I mean? They understand me. They understand me for who I am. And don't try to necessarily change things, because that's not their job. This is God's work in us. See? I really believe that this is a divinely inspired program. Bill and Bob, they were divinely inspired. I believe that I was a divine intervention in my life, being here, being able to stay alive through everything that I went through. Not getting busted, having no felonies, having no couple of UIs, couple weekend stays. I was doing this from the time I was 17 till I was 35. If I didn't have an angel, you know what I mean, looking out over me, I tell you, I don't know. You know. But anyway, I have a daughter, Lauren, who's Pam's daughter, and she's 35 now. I've got my He just had a grandbaby. He's little always going to be 2 years old.
So I'm a grandfather.
And Owen and I, Lauren, even though her mama passed away, I raised her since she was 8, 9 years old. She's very much in my life. She is, I call her my daughter. Because I helped, I raised her. And I remember she came at me when Pam was dying and said, how come you're selling fed pool feeding tube and I had to do all that stuff, right? In recovery, man, and you think you got, you worry about whether you're powerless and shit in this world or, you know, and then God puts all this power in your hand? That's a mind fuck. That'll bend your brain a little. You know, crying in the middle of my living room in a fetal position because I'm in so much pain and I don't know what to do. Hospice is there. I got a 600 milliliter bottle of morphine in my hand, thinking, looking in the mirror, and I'm getting ready to dose my wife, and I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm looking at myself. I'm going, man, I know what that'll do, and a voice comes to me in my head that says, you do that, you ruin everything. You got to feed it. You have to feed it for our entire life. Another God shot. It's wonderful. Because at least I'm present today to be able to know it, to be aware. You know. So anyway, you know, I met this woman, Lisa, in the fellowship. You know, I don't know how much time I had, but maybe every 9 years. Nice. So, have we known each other for 14, 15 years? You got 15 now.
14.
Yeah, 14. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the 15th year. Well, in the 15th year. And so anyway, we were friends for 6 years, 6, 7 years, and I'm not going to get into her stuff, but, you know, we were just friends. And then her life changed. And then we got together and we were both best friends. And then we were together for another... We just got married this last year. We did a COVID wedding. Me, the justice of the peace, and my wife. And that was it. It was a wonderful, beautiful day in Santa Barbara. You know? Don't need all the frills and thrills. Don't want to chase the honeys and the monies anymore. I'm done with that. I've had it. I've done it, you know. Don't need to be the cool guy. Just want to be me. And I found me in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I found me, and I actually like who I am most of the time. There's stuff that, you know, we got to continually work on because this is a never-ending, it's a living program. It never ends. You know, I need to continue to seek what it is this God, this loving God has for me, you know, to do, you know. And what it is, I don't know. I tell you, the last 3 years, I've been wondering. You know, I've been through some stuff in just the last 3 years. I've had 5 surgeries, 2 foot surgeries, a new knee, 2 shoulders. You know, I'm just recovering from all this stuff. I've been had to go on and off pain medication. This is not, you know. But I haven't had to do it alone, see? I've got a sponsor, his name is Evie. You know, I've got my sponsors, I've got my wife, you know. I've got 2 new kids that I get to be part of the group, you know. What a blessing for a hope to die joking off of all of them. Who had a death wish, really, and just never died. You know what I mean? I mean, let me tell you how God works in my life. I mean, just an example of a few things. Missed a plane that's crashed. Been run over by a car. I had guns pulled on me. I totaled 2 cars. I've been submerged in a pond in a vehicle. I've been hit in the head with a baseball bat. And I survived my drug addiction and alcoholism. And that's a God shot. He ain't done with me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is I'm supposed to be doing. You know? But I do know that, you know, there's something that I'm supposed to be doing. My work is not done. Because the places I've been, the people I was hanging with, there's no reason that I'm not either locked up or dead. And in some kind of an institution. Just, it doesn't make sense. You know, I'm going to talk about, you know, about this, but, you know, I'll go, you know, with my wife, in that period of time, I was totally insane. You know, I was totally insane. I, you know, 2 years, 14 years, 14 years of sobriety. My job changed. I lost 30% of my income. I had just refinanced my house. I paid off all the medical bills. And, I don't know, I had a trifecta going on. There's something else. And, yeah, Lauren's going to college, and I'm trying to pay, help her get through college. Pay for it. And, trying to remember where I was going. That's old time this What?
It was like about 13 or 14 years sober.
And it's the third step. You know, to redo my third step. Stevie took me back, okay? This is, I had all that going on. This is after my wife had passed. I was totally insane. I was admitted. I felt like I was being bashed out at work. My job changed. All that stuff. I was plotting, planning, I became homicidal and suicidal in recovery. I wanted to kill people. And I got together with my sponsor and we were sitting at the park bench at the Pismo. And he took me back through 1, 2, 3. You know, yeah, I thought I was, you know, insanity's definitely returned. And he goes, look, he goes, did you take the third step? And I said, yeah, I took the third step. He said, did you turn your life over to the care of God? And I said, yes, I did. Yeah. And he just goes, what are you tripping on, fucker? This is all necessary for you. Yeah. See, that's the whole deal. Life doesn't work out the way we think it's always going to work out. You know, we find out that we're able to deal with life on less terms around here. We're able to match calamity with serenity. We're able to have emotional sobriety, even though our ass is falling off. We're able to put one foot in front of the other and get another day. You know, they tell me around here that this is a 24-hour day program. You know, we got to re-up every day. We gotta re-up. You know, I mean, I gotta get my issue from God. I gotta get my issue, you know, to check my insanity. I gotta get my issue to realize I'm powerless and manageable. And I gotta make sure I apply all these steps in my life every day. It isn't a once done. This is the thing that works me more than I work it. Let me put it that way. Because I've gotten the freedom here. I've gotten internal love. I've gotten the ability to have a life beyond my wildest dreams. Right? I never thought that I would get married again. I never thought I'd fall in love like this again. I never thought I'd get an opportunity to raise more kids. I always wanted 3 kids. I never had any of my own, but I got 3 girls. Right? I wanted a boy, a girl, and a boy. I got 3 girls. Yeah, God's got a different plan than what I have. But he's always giving me everything that I needed. You know? It's always, you know, just when you're about ready and your ass is falling off, you're wondering whether your drink is going to help you.
You know, God doesn't show up until the 11th hour or 59th minute. And he's never any sooner, but he's always right on time. You know? And I think that's, you know, about respect, and I think that's about you showing yourself. You know? Are you able to feel it? Are you able to take it yet? You know? That's my, for me. It's been a wild ride. You know? And I got so much gratitude for my life and for this loving God, for Alcoholics Anonymous, for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Gratitude is too small for them. It's an overwhelming feeling of just bliss and joy that I get when I think about what we have here. If you've gotten anything out of what I said tonight, you know, I've been here for some time now. And what I tried to talk to you about was that life goes on. Just because you're sober doesn't mean it's all a banquet. Life gets easy. This is life on life's terms. It gets real. And now we're able to process it, deal with it. And now instead of having no solution, I have challenges and I find solutions. See? My challenges are met by loving God. There's days where, if you see me out of a meeting, I don't talk like this. But I know you. But you know, it's like, this is the best deal since sliced bread. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love you guys. Thanks for letting me share it. All right. Let's thank our speakers one more time, huh?